are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. Yeah, we're going to be using the crap out of you. Just using and abusing.
The free labor.
That's what I'm here for.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Wife or special companion was very upset about you coming back, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, well played, but go either way, I suppose.
Special companion.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
And I'm really jealous that you got to lay around and do nothing and watch Suicide Squad. That is pretty. I'm pretty jealous of that. So
it was the best Christmas gift I got. So I can't complain.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 175 of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast. I am your host, Mike Werner. You can catch me on Twitter at Mike Werner FWFB. Wishing everybody a Merry Christmas. We're recording the day after, and myself, I had a great holiday. It was nice and relaxed, not too stressful. So it was really kind of a change from past years. Really, really good situation for me. But with me tonight to talk some baseball is a couple of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits crew. First and foremost is our usual suspect, Matt Thompson. Matt, what's up, dude?
Good, man. How are you?
Doing well. Like I said, I'm pretty relaxed. I'm chill. I did have to go back to work today, which most people don't on Mondays. But when you're a bartender, you work anytime. So
yeah, I just got back in town for work. I was gone for 3 weeks. Doing some business, and I came back yesterday. Right in the morning, got in time for the festivities, and it's been relaxing today. It's been nice.
I'm sure your wife or special companion was very upset about you coming back, but that's neither here nor there.
Well played, but go either way, I suppose.
Special companion.
And that in the background there is Mr. Evan Peterson, kind of new to the Friends with Fantasy Benefits crew. Evan, what's up, dude?
Not much. I did not have to work today, so I've just been sitting around in my own filth watching Suicide Squad and researching some baseball to talk tonight with you guys.
Well, we're happy to have you, man. I know you're, like I said, a new kind of part of our group here, but always loved your work over at your other outlets and really happy you're aboard. And I'm really jealous that you got to, lay around and do nothing and watch Suicide Squad. That is pretty, I'm pretty jealous of that, so.
It was the best Christmas gift I got, so, I can't complain.
Speaking of Christmas, anything special you guys did for the holiday and, any special traditions that you, celebrate over the years? I'll start with you, Evan.
No, actually, Christmas Day was pretty laid back. We knocked everything out on Christmas Eve, which was nice. It kind of took all the pressure off the actual day, as it were. So, we had talked a little bit about this, before, but Christmas Eve over Christmas Day all the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, what you're talking about before, we are recording software, like, listeners probably already know, it's kind of sketchy at times. And we already recorded probably, 10, 15 minutes of the show, and it just decided to crap out. And, but regardless, this is not our first try at this. Matt, is there any special, Christmas traditions that you have or anything, special you got this year? Like, give us some details, man.
We do my family and stuff on in the morning.
Does your girlfriend your family, by the way? Like, is that a good situation?
It's a positive thing, so it's all good. We did her grandparents Christmas Eve night, and then we did my family in the morning, Christmas morning, and then her other grandparents on Christmas Day, and kind of eat appetizers and drink copious amounts of booze and mingle with people and have fun, do the good, shoot the shit, and it's pretty good. That's seems to be what we do the last couple of years, and it's always a good time.
Nice. Yeah, a few things that I do. One thing in particular, a Christmas tradition for me is, my family and I, we've been watching The Grinch every Christmas Eve, for years now, and it's just something that I've always kept up with. I live far away from them now in Nashville, compared to, Florida where I'm from, but it's something that we always kind of keep going, and, hopefully everybody has kind of these little Christmas traditions that they keep up with. That's kind of, to me, like the most important part, and, I hope everybody had a good holiday.
a safe holiday. You know, I know a lot of, you know, crazy stuff happens when you drink a little too much. To ask Justin, who is not on the show. He's a direct correlation of what happens when you drink too much. But
yeah, right.
Yeah. So we're going to talk a few news topics here. You know, Evan, where can people find you on Twitter and such? And, you know, give yourself a couple plugs before we get started.
At EasyEv3 on Twitter. And yeah, you're going to be hearing a lot more of me. I know we've got a lot of the team preview pods that we're looking to record here over the next couple of weeks. I got at least two with Matt, two with Mike, three with Chuck. I mean, I'm going to be all over the place like dog shit, man. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah, we're going to be using the crap out of you. Just using and abusing.
That's free labor.
That's what I'm here for, you know, and like I said, you know, us talking shop, you know, is nothing new. It's just been on different outlets. So I'm happy to have a home with Friends with Fantasy Benefits, and it's going to be a fun year for sure.
Absolutely. Very welcomed addition for sure. Matt, where can we follow you on Twitter so that we can, you know, read all of your cub trolling and, you know, every other type of trolling?
Come
that you
on,
do.
Man. No, no trolls, no trolling. MD Tomp, FWFB, like Evan said, team previews in the works. I have a couple with him. I believe I have a couple with you, Mike, and I'm sure I'll pick up a few here and there. I'm also working on the mini pods. They're going to go be prospect centered and come out, you know, alongside each team preview. So that's going to get going. That's going to be fun stuff.
Yes. So. Like you guys were talking about, we have the team previews coming up January 1st, the brand new year 2017. We will be releasing a new team preview every single day of the week. So Monday through Friday, you're going to have a fresh new podcast with us diving into each individual MLB team. It's very, very helpful when you're kind of doing your research and you're planning for your drafts coming up here in 2017. We did it last year. We got a lot of really good feedback from it. We're, again, going to do it this year. And we have it with a lot more manpower. So we're going to have a really fun and exciting time doing that. And, you know, please give us a rate and review on iTunes. Every rate and review really helps us out. It helps us get noticed. And, you know, we, you know, like to do this for free. So, you know, please help us out and just give 2 minutes to, you know, give us a little bit of feedback. And, you know, again, it really helps us out. So, yeah, look forward to that stuff. And with that said, let's go over a few news items. I know, you know, we've had a few minor things happen in baseball recently, but the biggest thing by far is Edwin Encarnacion being signed to the Cleveland Indians for 3 years, $60 million. And I'll ask you first, Evan, does this change his fantasy value in any way, or are you feeling that this is kind of just status quo for him and moving on?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty lateral move when you take a look at where he went last year and where he's kind of expected to go this year. I think he's a top three or four option at the first base position. You see the fluctuation in the whiff rate and some of the contact issues going on, but there's no question about the power whatsoever. Like 35 home runs is, you know, in ink as long as he stays relatively healthy. According to Hit Tracker Online, he led majors in what they label as no-doubter home runs with 20. Tied for second was Mark Trumbo and Nelson Cruz with 15. He had some struggles against southpaws last year, which I think will kind of positively regress for him. So I think kind of that 270-ish area for the batting average will keep him pretty steady at where you've seen his value in recent years in the draft.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I don't think he will put up the season he had last year. I mean, last year was the second time that he ever hit for more than 40 home runs. But, you know, since 2012, he has eclipsed $22 in roto value every single year. He's been as consistent as it gets. You know, in our FWFB mock draft that we've been doing here the last, you know, week or so, he was a top 18 pick. I completely agree with that spot. And that's before we even knew where he was going to be signing. And, you know, I just think overall, this is a consistent player. Yes, you did mention the whip whiff rate kind of being somewhat of a concern, but it was only, you know, what, 23% last year. Nothing really alarming to me there. His hard contact rate stays very high. He actually had a down year in that last year, and yet again still had, you know, the, like you mentioned, Evan, the highest no doubt home runs in all of baseball. He still has a very low ground ball rate, you know, hits a ton of fly balls. There's just really not a lot in his profile that makes me feel like he is going to have a dramatic downturn in value anytime moving or anytime soon for that matter. The one thing I will say is he will more than likely have a couple, you know, a little bit of a downtick in home runs. I don't think he'll hit 40 like I kind of, you know, alluded to earlier, but I think 30 plus is an automatic for him as long as he stays healthy. He's not too old. He's still, you know, he's only 34 years old. Nothing really to worry about here. So I think that this is a consistent profile that we will see transition fairly well over to Cleveland. But, you know, Matt, speaking about Cleveland and the landing spot, do you have any concern over the switch in ballpark and really the lineup for that matter? You know, him going from a, you know, just looking like a stacked lineup in Toronto to a team in Cleveland that you would think on the surface doesn't have as good of a team.
No, I'm not. But when he's a free agent, I had him as my fifth best player at first behind, you know, behind Goldschmidt, Cabrera, Rizzo, and Votto. And after the move to Cleveland, he stays at five for me. So I'm not moving him at all. I do think the home runs, like you said, will probably tick down to probably just below 40. The average might tick down a little tiny bit being off the turf and the faster moving balls and stuff through the infield. But I think the lineup concerns are a little bit overblown. I mean, Cleveland has Carlos Santana with his 350, 340, 360-ish on-base percentages in the leadoff spot, which is way better than he's ever had in Toronto. They kind of used Tulwitzki and Devon Travis and guys like that and kind of punted that spot. It was kind of a weird lineup construction out there. They had a weird roster. But interesting enough, I was surprised he ended up in Cleveland. I mean, the contract with the Indians is the highest they've ever given out to anybody, which is kind of shocking at $60 million for a team that just went to the World Series. Obviously, that'll change with Lindor and some of their arms that are coming free agents, but it's nice to see smaller market teams perceived anyways spending that money. So, I mean, my opinion of Encarnacion does not change. Like I said, dip the homers a little bit, probably the average a little bit, but nothing crazy.
Yeah, I love the Cleveland lineup. You know, they were top five in runs scored last year. And, you know, looking at the Blue Jays, they were actually, you know, top nine. And it wasn't a massive separation or anything like that. But it just goes to show that Cleveland's lineup, even last year with Napoli in there at first base and not E5, was still a very elite group of hitters. And, you know, adding somebody of that caliber really is a big boost to the lineup as a whole. When you look at Edwin Encarnacion's stats over the last few years and why he has been able to maintain, you know, $20 or more in value, it's really been because he's scored 90 plus runs in four of the last 5 years, and he's had over 100 RBIs in four of the last 5 years as well, with the lone, you know, exempt year being 98 RBIs. I think that he will continue to accrue those counting stats with a team that's just really stocked. I mean, you have Carlos Santana, like you mentioned, Matt, up top. You still have guys like Kipnis, Francisco Lindor, Michael Brantley should return this year when he wasn't there last season. Again, they were top five in runs scored. Jose Ramirez, we've talked about extensively on this team or on this show, especially at the end of last season. And then a guy that I know you and I love particularly, Matt, is Tyler Naquin, who I, you know, think will could emerge as a really good option this year. So there's a lot to like in this lineup. The ballpark itself doesn't have doesn't give massive suppression to home run power. It's kind of neutral. It actually helps lefties a bit. But, you know, Rogers Center really hasn't been as good of a, you know, hitter's haven, as you will, in terms of its production the last few years either. There's really just not a lot here to, you know, persuade me to think that Edwin Encarnacion is going to have a downturn in value at all. So I think we're all in lockstep there. I will kind of just look at the first base group here, since this is the most significant, you know, news item over the last week or so. And, you know, we're looking at guys like Goldschmidt and Votto and Miggy, but would you guys take Freddie Freeman over E5 right now, or are you guys continuing to keep E5 at the moment?
I got E5.
Absolutely no way. E5 over Freddie, and I'm a Braves fan too, but I think you're 34 home runs I think Freeman hit last year, and that's absolute ceiling for him, where I feel like it's almost the floor for E5, and just what he has at the top of the lineup, there's no way.
Yeah, and the only reason I ask that is because, you know, I mean, like, I know we're already taking Rizzo and we're taking Goldschmidt and, you know, we're taking guys like Miggy. So there's a few guys that we're automatically penciling in at first base ahead of him. But, you know, Freeman, you know,
Abreu?
I don't think we're not Abreu. No way. Not for me, at least. But at least
you said Cabrera.
Maybe. Yeah, Cabrera would be ahead of him, at least as of right now. But Freeman, he went 31 in our mock draft here, and it seems to me like he's the type of guy that, especially, you know, as we get more into draft season, could actually spike even more, especially if we hear any type of reports that Turner Field, it obviously got rebuilt here, is going to be more of a hitter's park. I think that we could see him even go in like the top 25 or so, and if people are scared off of E5 going to Cleveland, we could see them be, you know, very, very close in terms of average, you know, draft position. But it's just something I wanted to ask you guys, because at least right now I still have E5 ahead of them, and that's not going to change at all. But I do think in the fantasy community we might see them be even closer in terms of value than the way our mock draft, you know, currently has it constructed. You know, how about Daniel Murphy? Because he's somebody that I can see a lot of teams rolling with at first base in fantasy this year as well.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned these three. I have E5, Encarnacion is my fifth ranked first baseman, Murphy 6, and Freeman 7. So it's weird that you brought him up like that, but that gives you an idea where I'm at. But I really, really love the Murphy at first base strategy, and then choosing from the deep second base pool and using it to your advantage. I'm a big fan and big proponent of that.
How about you, Evan?
I think it's Edwin over all these guys, and it's funny you were talking about how the Braves Stadium is actually going to play. I think it's going to play a little more hitter friendly personally with some of the things that I've seen. Be sure to check into our Braves pod. That's going to be me and Matt on the 4th, I believe. But yeah, they're moving in the fences a little bit, and from what I've seen, left field isn't going to really change a whole lot. But right field is going to be, they've got a taller wall out there, but it's going to be pulled in a little bit further. But yeah, stay tuned on that.
Yeah, I'll be in for that for sure. So in general, you know, the last thing I'll talk about with this is that, you know, first base is, you know, we're going to get into the position previews as well, probably right after we get done with the, you know, all the major league teams and everything. So, you know, be sure to, you know, stay tuned for that. But I think in general, we can all agree that the top tier at first base is still pretty much intact. But once you kind of dive into the draft, like right now, currently in our mock draft, you know, we're right around pick 135 or so. And, you know, first base has fallen off in a big way. You're looking at guys like Brandon Belt, you know, Brad Miller and Mike Napoli. Those are your available options right now. So it's more important than ever to really make sure that you get one of those stud first basemen early in the draft. And, you know, I guess in a nutshell, what I'm saying is with the consistency that E5 provides, this move to me, like you guys have all kind of said, is pretty much, you know, a lateral move, and he's going to continue to be just as good as he's been.
It's interesting too, because I mean, a lot of things I've noticed is guys that sign recent free agent contracts, like Dexter Fowler, or guys that get moved, like Adam Wheaton and Encarnacion, they always have a couple spots higher ADPs because of that. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? Like, they always seem to be.
Well, I think because it's just bias. Hot wire stuff.
It's recency,
you know?
Bias. Yeah, so they get moved up a little higher. And I don't think that's going to happen with E5.
Yeah, I think it'll work against him. I think him going to Cleveland as time goes on, especially as, you know, right now it's winter time, and it just kind of, the calendar just turned over to winter. But, you know, baseball season comes April 3rd this year. You know, I'm counting down the days, as I'm sure you guys are. As we get closer to those days, and once we get closer to pitchers and catchers reporting, more and more fantasy analysts and people are going to be diving into baseball. And I think once they, you know, just looking at it on the surface, moving from Toronto to Cleveland, I think he's going to drop a few. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, E5, once we kind of get things going, starts going in, you know, the 25 range, like I said earlier with the Freeman comparison, and, you know, Freeman starts creeping up a little bit. It's definitely conceivable, but, you know, it's really early to kind of talk about that. But regardless, we all love E5, and there's nothing much to really change here. To kind of continue the exciting news trend, let's move on and talk about our next move. That's Jett Bandy getting traded to the Milwaukee Brewers in exchange for Martin Maldonado. I have a hard time pronouncing either of these guys' name right, but Matt, can you give us a little bit of information on this move? Is it fantasy? Is there anybody fantasy viable out of these two? And you know, what can we expect?
I don't really think there's anybody fantasy valuable here. I think maybe Bandy is a $2 catcher in AL only, and Maldonado, or excuse me, NL only now, and Maldonado is just be just a dollar play. But I mean, Bandy's got a little bit of pop. It's kind of intriguing him going to Milwaukee, but don't let the ballpark suck you in a little bit, because I think he's going to split some time with Andrew Susak, and they got Nottingham down the pipe, but I don't think Nottingham's going to catch, but he's there. I think he's just a warm body to get in the space of to hold down the fort in case Susak kind of fails. He's a little bit better offensive player than Maldonado, but a worse defender. So, yeah, it's not really exciting.
How about you, Evan?
Yeah, I think there's more real baseball goodness to be found in here as opposed to fantasy baseball goodness. I think the name that Matt brought up as far as Jacob Nottingham, defensively, I don't think he's going to stick behind the plate, and the Brewers are kind of realizing that. With Maldonado, I think there's arbitration stuff, and I think Bandy is just kind of, like you said, the warm body, which is fine sometimes. That's all you need. But I think it's nothing to really see here outside of deeper NL only leagues. And
I just want to make a quick comment about Maldonado in this deal too. Like, a lot of people will look at you in AL only league and you'll jump out and you'll see his on base percentage last year was .332. Like, I mean, yeah, the average was 200. It was hovered around 200. And the OBP was .332, but a lot of that came hitting eighth. I think he had something like 7 or 8 intentional walks. And he's not going to get those in the American League, so adjust accordingly for the OBP. Don't buy into that.
Yeah, I think that this is a non-factor move. I think the biggest, impact on this, the whole entire thing is definitely Jacob Nottingham, like you guys have already mentioned. So, I'm just going to kind of move on here. If you're going to spend any type of money on any of these guys, it should definitely be Jacob Nottingham, who will likely not start in the big leagues this year, but certainly has the biggest possible fantasy impact of anybody here. So, moving on, we will talk about the Koji Uehara signing to the Cubs. Evan, we'll kind of roll it back to you first. Does this move the needle at all for you? Do you think that this is somebody that could, kind of work his way into a setup role and possibly even, gain some saves this year if something were to happen to the newly acquired Wade Davis? Or are you kind of saying, Koji Uehara is, practically 50 years old at this point and I have no interest?
Well, I don't think that's solid math if you're rounding Koji Uehara up to 50 years old, but he old, don't get me wrong, but he does still strike out people, and the home runs were kind of an issue. Even still, that 3.5 ERA, I think, is only going to get worse kind of going forward from here. I think the Red Sox had, more pressing things that they were looking into, and Uehara, he's been a fantastic bullpen piece. But I think it was something that the Cubs definitely needed, as far as kind of just an extra arm to extend those games. But I don't think he's anybody that you're going to have to worry about as far as like Andrew Miller style, even for a guy that, what did he strike out, 35% of batters last year. I just don't think he's anybody that you're going to have to worry about outside of, 14, 16 team mixed leagues.
Yeah, I mean, he surprisingly has done really well against lefties these last couple of years. I mean, 153 batting average against in 2015, and then 139 batting average against, that goes for lefties. The last two seasons, really, that's really nice to see. And then in terms of his, strikeout profile, like you kind of mentioned, he's doing well there. I mean, he's struck out, 10 or more, batters per nine ever since 2010. That's really great to see. He is a fly ball pitcher, going to be pitching in Wrigley Field, which is not a great recipe for success, especially with a guy that has a home run problem in his past. Even if you were to you know, duplicate his home run per nine, which was 1.5 last year, and the 13% home run to fly ball rate that came along with that, I still think we would have a guy that has a, you know, 3.5 to 3.3 ERA or so, with still pretty nice strikeout numbers, and a guy that typically has pretty good control as well. I mean, he had, you know, 1.1 walks per nine or less for five straight seasons, dating back to, from 2010 to 2014. So we're looking at a guy that does have exhibit pretty good control, pretty nice strikeout numbers. Got pretty unlucky with the strength or left on base rate last season, but I think overall, while this isn't a move that, you know, 12 team and even necessarily 15 team leaguers might care about, I think NL only he might play, just as a guy that you can use as a middle relief arm that can give you some innings, and he might be able to work his way. I mean, they hate Hector Rondon. I don't see them going back to him. I automatically assume that if Wade Davis goes down, I mean, first and foremost, I think Carl Edwards would be the guy, but if it wasn't Carl Edwards, I think Yoahara would be the person that would probably step in there. And all of us kind of talked pre-show about Wade Davis a bit, but you know, there's nothing certain here in terms of his health, and you know, there's nothing really certain with anybody with health. So it's always nice to have some of these, you know, really good high leverage arms just in your arsenal, or you know, kind of a waiver wire speed dial and shower, you know, formats, just to be able to you know, be able to trigger them in whenever something were to happen to somebody in front of them. But so I guess I'm a little higher on him. Matt, how do you feel about this move?
Yeah, I'm a little higher than you, I think, Mike. I actually like this move a lot for the Cubs. I think, as you mentioned, they absolutely hate Hector.
You like yeah. A move the Cubs made?
Yeah, like a lot of moves they make, unfortunately. But I like you said, they hate Hector Rondon. And with the way Davis questions that we talked about, I think this is the guy next in line. I know Uehara has his questions himself, but I mean, he has elite level command. He's had it since he went to Boston and became a reliever. But I mean, the key with him, and you touched on it, is the home runs. Yeah, a little nervous going to Wrigley, but it said that in the last five seasons, when his homer per fly ball percentage has been less than 10%, his FIP is 2.48. When it's greater than 10%, it's 3.21. I mean, there's your problems right there. The command hasn't wavered. The injury concerns a little bit in July. He went down with an injury. He had a rough June. Maybe that's why, because he was hurt. But I like this move. One-year deal for the Cubs. Yeah, he's 97 years old, but he can still get the job done.
That's really rounding up.
Once again, terrible math.
I think he's the guy to own. If you draft Wade Davis, I'd handcuff him with Uehara.
Really, you think so? I don't know how you can feel like we're really early again in the off season here. But
I know. I'm just assuming Joe Maddon is very veteran heavy when it comes down to it. He was very resistant to go to Edwards, and Edwards got in trouble in the playoffs. He'd pull him right away. I think he's going to give Uehara a longer leash, and I think he's going to be the trusted ninth inning guy because he's got a relationship with Theo from Boston. I think he's the guy if Davis falters, if Davis gets hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one thing I was going to say, because you guys are terrible at math tonight, the splitter, which is what he's really known for, last year, if you look at PitchFX data, 244 batting average against, compared to a 167 overall.
Yeah.
So once again, tracing it back to kind of the Boston thing, if they think they can reclaim that and, you know, kind of fix what went wrong with him, I don't think it's a bad signing. I just don't think that you can guarantee that he's going to be the next guy up should Davis go down with any, you know, elbow concerns or anything like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, at least right now, he's a tentative, like, reliever that you can add and, you know, just give you a few innings, a few quality innings. I think it's kind of a, you know, stretch to, you know, even think possibly that he could take over. But I do think that there is a chance. I think that we're all kind of in the middle. You know, I'm in the middle at least, and like Evan's on the lower side and then Matt's on the higher side of things. So regardless, we have like a couple different spectrums of possibilities here.
I mean, my logic too is, I mean, in NL only leagues, he's going to be owned anyways, I think, because the strikeouts are so high and the command is good. So I don't know. He might be a $2 or $3 play for me in that, but I'm not going to go higher than that. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, regardless, he's somebody to keep your eye on. Somebody that I will never keep my eye on ever again, because the last time I did, he had like this nasty mustache that I just really couldn't erase from my memory, was his Derek Holland. He gets signed to the Chicago White Sox, and, you know, on the surface, you know, just talking about it, I think it's gross, and, you know, there's really not much to say, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, Texas has always been a pretty good hitter's park, and yes, he's moving to another hitter's park here, but do you think that there is any possibility that we can get a few good starts out of him, possibly even in, you know, 15 team mixers or so, Evan?
Sorry, my mic was on mute.
Okay.
Yes, you can find good starts from Derek Holland. Will you know when they will be? No, you will not. They most likely won't be at the Cell. And granted, he's coming from Arlington, where, you know, everybody knows how that ballpark plays. Even though he pitched a half run worse at Arlington than he did his road ERA, suggesting like, oh, you know, it's okay, there's, you know, a silver lining. The road ERA was still over 4. He doesn't strike anybody out. He can't stay healthy. Even if you look at his sub 70% strand rate as an area where there could possibly be some positive correction, the best you're expecting is like when James Shields came over, and that didn't work out for anybody last year. So I think that the only thing to watch with Derek Holland is the balls going over the fence out in the outfield.
Yeah, and he's messing with his repertoire a lot. You know, last season in particular, you know, he had heavy four-seam fastball usage, and then he dropped it in August a bit, you know, and started going heavy sinker. And then he kind of mixed it up again, started throwing his slider and curveball more. It just seems to me like a guy that's still trying to feel his way into, you know, getting batters out. And, you know, we're well into his career here. He shouldn't be kind of trying to fiddle with his pitch mix still. This should be a guy that has a pitch mix established that he can, you know, kind of rely on, and he doesn't have one pitch that can get him out of things. I know he, you know, went through a few starts last year where he was able to kind of manage things and, you know, provide quality outings, but, you know, he had 10 quality starts in 20 games started. That's a really bad situation. I mean, a 50% success rate is not something that I'm looking for. Bad ballpark, overall bad pitcher, a guy that, you know, the last, you know, 3 of the last 4 years has a 1.29 whip or worse. His expected ERA has been over four, each of the last 2 years. Fly ball pitcher, there's nothing I can hang my hat on. Even in 5x5 leagues where you're looking for wins, strikeouts, a low whip, a low ERA, I mean, I'm oh for all those. So there's really nothing for me here on Derek Holland. I think that this is just a move that the White Sox wanted to make to just add some depth to their team. Matt, do you have anything to say on this move, or do you want to move on?
He checks every single box of things I do not want in my pitchers. He doesn't strike enough guys out. The velocity is down from previous seasons. He's messing with his pitch repertoire. It seems to me like he's fully aware that his career is on the line, and that's not a good recipe. So I'm out.
Yeah, I mean, he's 30, so, I mean, that puts him, what, like 67 years less than Koji Urahara. I mean, he still has some time to kind of make it up. But
he does. It's disappointing for me to watch, like, what he's become, though, because I remember flashes of the 2011 World Series when he was with Texas. He was dominating in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And, like, and you look at now, I mean, I know that was 5 years ago, but, I mean, that guy isn't not coming back.
Nowhere to be found. Well, hopefully his mustache is nowhere to be found, because I can't stand that thing.
Or that Harry Carey impersonation.
It's bad. It's all bad.
And he's going, oh, man, now he's going to Chicago next year, too. So now he's going to do that.
Oh, he definitely.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
It's definitely. Burn it with fire. Let's talk about the next move. A guy that's definitely burning with fire, Mike Dunn. Just so everybody knows, I did not make this list. This is 100% Justin Mason's doing. So we're going off a list that I was given, just so everybody knows. But Mike Dunn, he is going to the Colorado Rockies, going to be in a setup role, at least as of now. But do we think that there is any possibility of him, you know, gaining some saves this season, or getting into a high leverage role, somewhat to the Koji Urahara theory here, where he could possibly, you know, be in line for some saves at some point, Evan?
I think he has a better opportunity to be fantasy relevant than Min Dunn, who was the original listing on our list here. Thanks, Justin.
I actually, just a quick story. When we were going through the notes prior to this starting, I was like, oh, Min Dunn. And I even asked you to, I was like, wait a minute, is this like a Korean signing that I just didn't know about? Or, and you're like, no, that it's actually Mike Dunn. I was like, oh, well, solid choice of spelling. Regardless, go on.
Yeah. Remember when the Rockies were playoff contenders last like June, July,
oh, yeah.
And then they absolutely pooped the bed. Like they needed somebody in the bullpen, and Dunn has been a pretty solid reliever over the past, few years over a, basically almost a 10% or a 10 K per nine, 3.5 ish ERA. He wants to close. He wants the job. I mean, there's quotes out there where he says that, if you're reliever, you basically want the ninth inning, and then he basically says that he wants to win games. So I like Ottavino personally, but I think Dunn is going to be next up. Even if Mott or any of these other guys come back, I don't think he's going to be relevant in a like 10 team mixed league or anything like that, but probably 14 team is where I'd start taking a peek at him.
At least as of right now, you have Ottavino penciled in as the guy. And then, you have Jake McGee and Jason Mott still there. I just don't see a scenario in which Mike Dunn gets meaningful, a meaningful chance to save games. While I do like the profile a bit, there is, some glaring problems here, especially in a place like Coors Field. He's had the benefit of playing in Miami, which has been one of the, most pitcher-friendly parks in all of baseball. He's moving to Coors Field where, his fly ball profile certainly is a problem. He has an over 40% fly ball rate for his career. He's also struggled with control at times. We saw him in 2015. In 72 games, almost put up 5 walks per 9. The strikeouts are there, so I certainly like that part of it. But first pitch strike rate is a bit under or below league average. And, like I said, we've seen some times where his walks have been a bit of a problem. We've also seen the home run to fly ball rate and home run per 9 bump up over the last couple of years as well. So there's a couple of things that have me a little bit concerned about somebody like Mike Dunn, but I still think he's the type of guy that can strike out a few batters and, should be okay if you're in a deeper league. And, so I don't necessarily think he comes into saves, but there is some things I like. Matt, anything kind of that you want to talk about with Mike Dunn or Min Dunn here?
No. I feel like he's not a guy that's going to be fantasy relevant at all, because I think Jake McGee's the next guy in line. Or Carlos Estevez or somebody like along those lines. But I personally believe in Ottavino. I like Ottavino a lot. But
so
I Mike Dunn better against righties than lefties, but he was used against lefties more last year, which okay. He missed 2 months with a September forearm strain, or missed 2 months with a September sprain. Does not pitch well on back-to-back days. I'm out.
How do you know that?
I read that stat. Someone posted it on Twitter when he signed, and his ERA in back-to-back days was over 9. I know ERA is a terrible stat for a reliever, but it points to some things, and that matters when you're a left-handed one-out guy or possibly going to be late innings if you can't work back-to-back days. Not good.
Yeah, what are we going to do now? Start counting wins as a Hall of Fame stat? Like, what the hell?
Yeah, right?
Let's move on. So I'm assuming this is all because Justin's a Giants fan, but Jimmy Rollins signs a minor league deal with the Giants. Anybody interested? Matt, we'll start with you.
Well, the White Sox cut him last year despite having Tyler Saladino and Carlos Sanchez and guys like that to give at bats to. So that's enough, I think.
Yeah. How about you, Evan?
Yeah. Fuck you, Justin, and pass.
That's awesome. Yeah, I pretty much agree. There's really nothing for me here. I think that he will probably not make the team, but this is something I'm not going to talk about. I refuse to talk about unless he actually makes the team. So we'll leave it at that. Something I definitely want to talk about is Daniel Hudson, and he gets signed to the Ray Searage Magician-led Pirates, which really has me interested. Last year we saw Hudson finally, getting some meaningful innings. He did pitch in 2015 as well, but I feel like 2016 was the first time he was really on notice, especially for fantasy. Really didn't end up with amazing numbers when you look at the year as a whole, but there were a few times where he was certainly fantasy viable that you could use him as a middle reliever. Definitely could use him to try and get you a few saves. He ended up with 5 on the year, 17 holds as well. So there's certainly a case to be made that Hudson could do very well in a place like Pittsburgh, a much better ballpark. Obviously, Ray Searage still has really good arm talent as well. But Evan, what do you think about this move for the Pirates, and what do you think about this move for Daniel Hudson's fantasy value?
Well, I think that there's a fantastic article that everybody should go read out on Fangraphs by Eno Saris, where he was taking a look at the past 2 years, and he was looking at pitchers who basically throw hard, where Daniel Hudson was averaging 95.8 miles per hour, and pitchers that were getting over a... getting good whiffs. Hudson had a 12.5% swinging strike rate, and he was one of like 19 pitchers in baseball over that period of time to reach those points, which, is pretty good. And even though Roster Resource has Tony Watson currently slotted in as the closer, I think this is kind of definitely what you would want to see as far as moving into a closer role and being a speculative guy. Even though it's a pretty good lineup around him, and I think he's going to tally saves if he gets a spot, I just don't know how high people are going to value him, and therefore I'm kind of going to sit back in like early mocks and see where everybody else has him lined up. But I'm interested. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, how about you, Matt?
I'm interested. I mean, if you take away, I know this is really hard and strange to do, but you take away, his June and July where he allowed 25 earned runs. I mean, that's in only the 17 innings. I mean, that's going to lower the ERA quite a bit. I know ERA is a terrible stat for relievers, but ERA counts in fantasy, so it is what it is. The strikeouts are always going to be there for Hudson. He doesn't walk a lot of guys. I really like this signing for the Pirates. I think it's way better than spending $50 million plus on Melanson, when you can just kind of do the Daniel Hudson route and get 2-year deal for $11, $12 million for a potential closer. Hudson's always been a guy, when healthy, that's pitched better than peripherals out of the bullpen. I know it's a really small sample, only 134 games out of the bullpen, but strikeouts are up over 1 per inning. Walks are around 3.2 per 9, under 1 home run per 9 in Arizona. I like Hudson as a sneaky late-ish round add for some saves in Pittsburgh. I think Tony Watson is a better left-handed guy with the funk that he offers, a better left-handed loogie guy. So I think Hudson's the dude out here. So I like it.
Yeah, I love this move. I love it for the Pirates, and I love it for fantasy. Now, the one thing to kind of worry about is how high Hudson starts to go in drafts. And, I think that's what you were kind of alluding to, Evan, earlier, is kind of, I want to sit back and see how high he actually does go, because, if he starts becoming a, top 190, 200 pick or something, then that's where you're kind of like, this guy doesn't even have the role yet. why would I do that? But in general, I think that this is a really good signing. I love the profile. I love guys that throw hard, especially in the ninth inning. Like you already kind of mentioned, Evan, his 12 and 13% swinging strike rate the last 2 years, phenomenal. Well above league average, and the velocity, like I said, is really, really strong, 96 miles an hour. Even with a little bit of a home run problem, 10% home run to fly ball rate the last 2 years, we're looking at a guy that's moving to an amazing park. Like I mentioned, PNC Park is one of the best to pitch in all of baseball, and he's moving away from Chase Field. So I love that move automatically. And we're looking at, last year he had a 4.22 expected ERA after a 5.22 regular ERA. That's kind of in correlation with a 64% left on base rate. That's well below his career average and league average as well. So there's a lot of
correction that I can see being made to Daniel Hudson here. And this is just another, you know, project for Ray Searage. I mean, we've seen it time and time again, him be successful with some of these guys. You know, I mean, if you can turn around Natale Feliz, you know, Francisco Liriano, Ivan Nova. I mean, Ivan Nova was on every fantasy roster last year, and he was terrible for years. So, I mean, this is just another kind of, not reclamation project, but this is another signing that I think could really help out fantasy owners in the long run. So, especially in deeper formats, I think he's automatically, if you're drafting now for some odd reason, I think he's definitely worth the speculation at. And I think that he's one of the few guys that could, you know, gain 30 saves just on pure talent alone and the situation. So, I like him a lot. Let's move on to a guy that I don't like a lot, and that is Clay Buchholz going to the Phillies. And, I mean, just a really odd move. I don't really know what to make of it just on the surface here. But, Evan, talk to me about Clay Buchholz and whether you like this move or not for Philadelphia and fantasy owners.
My only logic in looking at this move is that the Phillies took Jeremy Hellickson, who was the 118th pick overall in the 2005 draft, and he actually had a pretty decent year last year. So Clay Buchholz was the 42nd pick in that draft, so they should probably be able to do a little bit better with him, right? there's red flags all over the place, and it's not just in his ability to stay on the field. Strikeouts suck. The home runs were an issue. So he threw, it was a 4.78 ERA last year. 8 of his 21 home runs were solo shots, and just imagine what the damage to his ERA would have been if, you know, things would have gone a little bit differently there. Also talking about Ducks on the Pond, 228 average against with men on base compared to a career average of 251. So there's just a lot of things, and other than his name being Clay Buchholz, that, you know, scare me away from this. And I want absolutely no part, even if you're going to try and say, oh, he's moving to the NL, strikeout increase. Nope, not going to do it.
Yeah. Matt, do you have anything to add on this?
Buchholz, not intriguing to me. I mean, he did have a nice second half last year. But the thing that strikes me is kind of the big thing here is he went back and forth between the rotation and the bullpen last year, and he still only had 6 Ks per 9. That's not good. The walks were up at 3.5. It's not a profile that's exciting. I believe there's probably some streamer upside here at the best. Philadelphia, it's a good, decent investment for them. It allows them to keep some of their younger kids in AAA a little bit longer because they don't have much of that depth in between. So it's good for them in that aspect. But I'm not a big Clay Buchholz guy, or Cletus, as they say.
Cletus. To me, Clay Buchholz screams of a guy that could just completely fall off if it hasn't already, as I completely drop my drink off the counter. It seems to me like when he goes, it might go like really fast. And I think we're already starting to see that. Boston, you know, he's been just somebody that Boston has loved for a long time. And for them to pretty much give up on him last year and then to trade him this year just tells me that they're done. And if Boston's done, they have a pretty decent pitching coach. Also, John Farrell is a very solid pitching coach in his own right. I feel like if they could have salvaged anything from him, then they could have done that already. And the fact that they're just kind of letting him move on to an organization with Philly, by the way, who has no analytics. They don't like to really do anything in that department. They, you know, pretty much trust their scouts and what they see on the field. And
I think that's different now with their new guy they got.
Yeah, and that might change over time. But I just, at least up to this point, we've seen, you know, a franchise that has pretty much said, you know, nothing, you know, nothing good in terms of analytics. Regardless, though, you guys have already kind of mentioned a lot of the stats. You know, this is a guy that, you know, while the strikeouts are down, you know, even last year, you know, he had a 4.78 ERA. His expected ERA or xFIP was higher than that. He had a 68% strand rate, and that was just about at his career average as well. His fly ball percentage went up a massive amount last year. That's what really kind of worries me. Once you look into what Evan looked into with the solo shots and, you know, the fact that his left on base rate was still career average and he still had almost 5 ERA, that's not going to help anybody. I think that at best, he is a streamer in shallow leagues, and that's, again, if he's like
in, you know, at Marlins Stadium facing the Marlins, and you know, pretty much it. Maybe San Diego. I mean, and there's only a few spots.
Yeah, playing the Marlins after Stanton gets hurt.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, there's very few spots that you would feel okay with it. So in NL only, even, I'm really pretty much off. I think that he's just solely a streamer at this point. So let's move on to our last move, and I mean, it's a dandy. We got Ben Revere being signed by the Angels. I'll start with you, Matt. Is this of any interest to you? Obviously, speed is something that we are needing to look for in fantasy, and you know, Revere really disappointed a lot of fantasy owners last year. So are you kind of intrigued by this?
He's got a potential chance to return some value here, but I'm questioning the role. I mean, Cameron Maybin's penciled in as the left fielder, and
we know he'll stay healthy.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And Revere is going to be the fourth outfielder guy. And like I said, when Maybin goes down, I think Revere can be valuable in hindsight of what you're paying for him. I mean, you got to look at the guy before this year. His last 3 years, he had 305, 306, 306. And then last year he had 217. I know he battled injury problems and such, but he's a complete worthless player if he's not hitting for average, because he doesn't walk, doesn't have any power, and needs to get on to get steals. If Maybin goes down, I'd add him, because I think the skills are there, if healthy. But no, not paying a price for him. I'll get him I'll get him off waivers if he's cheap and free.
How about you, Evan?
Yeah, there's basically not a whole lot else you can say besides that. If you're going for, you know, cheap steals late in a deep league, like, go for it. But fourth outfielder, and if he did happen to get into the lineup, there's enough around him where he would be interesting, but it's just a matter of where they would hit him once he finally cracked it. You know, if they put him up towards the top, which I don't think they would, or they kind of slot him at ninth as kind of like a second leadoff hitter, which is probably the more likely scenario. He'd be one of those guys that's just going to be, you know, cheap steals in the bank whenever he finds the playing time and kind of a roto format. But just don't watch him play and, you know, think about it afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, there was only 28 guys that stole 20 or more bases last year, which is, you know, insanely bad. It's something that definitely has me concerned. And this is a guy that stole, you know, this is a guy that stole 30 or more bases in four of the last 5 years prior to 2016. Yes, he's going to the Angels, and you know, they offensively are not a very good team, at least as of right now, even though they have the best player in baseball, you know, on their squad. But
free Mike Trout.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a little worried about Ben Revere and his future, but I do think that this is something we should monitor because, you know, like I said, Cameron Maybin is surely not going to stay healthy. This is a guy in Revere that is used to leading off. No, he doesn't have a great walk rate, but he did hit better than 280 against righties in, you know, what, four of the last 5 years prior again to 2016. He, you know, is still isn't old. He's 29. I can see kind of read a story in my head of him, you know, being at least a bit fantasy viable this season, maybe like Jared Dyson-esque, if you will. It's just somebody that you can get very, very, very late in AL only and might be able to give you 15 plus stolen bases. Of course, there's going to be no power, and, you know, the batting average, like we've seen, has not been something, you know, that, you know, has been consistent with him, but it has been in a sense if you look at the 4 years prior to last year. So if you want to look at last year as more of an outlier as opposed to what will all of a sudden turn into the new mean, I'm kind of okay with that, especially with the fact that he will cost you literally nothing. So with that, man, let's wrap this up. I mean, I know it was a kind of a quick show, but there wasn't a lot of news out there, and, you know, like I said, E5 was kind of the biggest kind of headliner of things. We're still kind of trying to get things in order after you know, holiday season, and, you know, we still have the new year coming up. But Evan, let's kind of close things out again. Where can people reach you and tell everybody what you're going to be working on, and you know, all that jazz?
At EasyEv3 on Twitter, team previews. You're going to be hearing a lot of me, probably about twice a week, and it's going to be a fun time. So make sure that you're spending 2017 with your friends with fantasy benefits here.
Yeah, man. Like I said, really excited to have you. Always loved you over in your other outlets, and certainly happy to have you. It's like we just signed you as like E5. Like, we might as well call you R E5.
Yeah, it's a weird thing because, you know, me and you have done a few shows together. I don't know about Matt. I think he was on one of the shows where I was actually a guest last year. But it's nothing new for us to kind of sit around and shoot the shit. It's just different for people to hear us on this format. And I think it's going to be a fun time all year long.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really excited. Matt, man, go ahead.
Since he's the new E5, I mean, who's the draft pick we had to give up?
I mean, not sure actually.
Hopefully it's Justin, right?
No, that's not gonna happen. He's still was like it Justin's Lauria. Beard?
Oh, his beard. That's why he had to shave. That's
yeah,
right.
His beard did get given up. But the problem is that it grows back like fairly quickly.
Oh, yeah.
I would venture to say that he is the Jeffrey Lauria of Friends with Fantasy Benefits. He's kind of like,
I'll deal with that. Yeah, that's about fair. But yeah, should we tell Evan that we're gonna fire him after all the team previews are done, or should we wait?
I guess we should wait.
Yeah. Okay. We'll just.
It's like waiting until Friday to fire somebody. That way, you know, there's no incidents, and they've already done most of the work, and it's okay. I'm expecting it.
Gus Bradley in football. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people that are listening to this aren't necessarily football fans, but, you know, they didn't even give him the opportunity to fly home with the team. They just let him go. They're like, see ya, man. You know, you can find your own win home, asshole.
Yeah, right. No, but in all seriousness, we're happy to have Evan on. Good addition to our squad here. MD Tomp, FWFB on Twitter. Ask me anything about baseball, and I will respond to you. How about that?
Yeah, man. Also excited to have Matt Bowie, too. We added him as well, and I know I'm going to be on with him for a couple of the preview shows. So we stockpiled, man. We had some nice additions this year. We're going to be like, you know, moving up in the ranks. It's like we're a young team that, you know, is trying to find their way, and hopefully we take a step forward this year. Hopefully not the type of step forward that like the Minnesota Timberwolves are going through in the NBA, but hopefully bigger.
We saw where we are, and we splurged for some extra free agents to supplement our core.
So. Yeah. There you go. So we'll see what happens. You can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. I'm still doing all the football stuff for Friends with Fantasy Benefits, the preview shows. I, you know, still do my updates on fantasypros.com as well if you want to check that out. I will have a bit of an expanded role at Baseball HQ this year, more than likely. So, you know, make sure you kind of keep your eyes and ears peeled for that. But again, just a lot of really exciting stuff happening on the site. I just got over being sick last week, so sorry for my voice kind of cutting out here towards the end, but still got to dust off my vocal cords apparently. But yeah, like I said, please rate and review the show. It's really important to us, and you know, it really helps us out. So with that, for Evan, Matt, and myself, thanks for listening, and have a fantastic offseason. Falling in love is never by the book. Getting close beneath the blanket of a million stars.
Boom.